Hosea chapter 2, beginning in verse 2. I will be reading and following along in the New American Standard this evening. Let us hear now God's holy, infallible, inerrant word. Contend for your mother, contend, for she is not my wife, and I am not her husband. And let her put away her harlotry from her face, and her adultery from between her breasts, or I will strip her naked and expose her as on the day when she was born. I will also make her like a wilderness, make her like desert land, and slay her with thirst. Also, I will have no compassion on her children, because they are children of harlotry, for their mother has played the harlot. She who conceived them has acted shamefully. For she said, I will go after my lovers, who give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flax, my oil and my drink. Therefore, behold, I will hedge up her way with thorns, and I will build a wall against her so that she cannot find her paths. She will pursue her lovers, but she will not overtake them. And she will seek them, but will not find them. Then she will say, I will go back to my first husband, for it was better then for me than now. For she does not know that it was I who gave her the grain, the new wine, and the oil, and lavished on her silver and gold, which they used for Baal. Therefore, I will take back my grain at harvest time and my new wine in its season. I will also take away my wool and my flax, given to cover her nakedness. And then I will uncover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and no one will rescue her out of my hand. I will also put an end to all her gaiety, her feasts and her new moons and her Sabbaths, and all her feastal assemblies. I will destroy her vines and fig trees, of which she said, these are my wages, which my lovers have given me. And I will make them a forest, and the beasts of the field will devour them. I will punish her for the days of the Baals, when she used to offer sacrifices to them, and adorn herself with her earrings and jewelry, and follow her lovers, so that she forgot me, declares the Lord. We'll end our reading of God's word for this evening there. Well, friends, you know that having me around for the summer means that you're in for some gardening illustrations and or imagery. And allow me to give you some of that this evening, please. When it comes to our garden at home, Miriam and I have our own distinct tastes. Miriam is a big fan of the annuals, the annual flowers. She likes the colorful flowers that blossom and bloom just once a year. You have them for the summer. They're beautiful. They add color to your garden. Then you say goodbye at the end of the season, the annuals. I, on the other hand, am a big fan of the perennials, the plants and the flowers that survive the winters, returning each spring. I like to invest in something over the long haul, and I want to know that the investment I make in my plants is going to pay off and not simply shrivel away at the end of the season. I like the perennials in our garden. They're always around, returning year after year, and that's exactly why we call them perennials, isn't it? The Oxford English Dictionary defines perennial or perennially as not coming to an end, coming up year after year. And it's not only plants or flowers that can be described as perennial. The Bible reminds us that there are issues stemming from the sinful human heart that are just as perennial, we would say, as the plants or flowers that we find in the garden. Perennial problems. Problems that return year after year, generation after generation into the fabric of human experience, wreaking havoc, destroying lives, and unleashing disastrous effects. And friends, perhaps the biggest perennial problem of the human heart is the issue before us in our passage this evening, the problem of idolatry. The problem of idolatry. John Calvin's often repeated comment is fitting here. He said, "The human heart is an idol factory." The human heart is an idol factory. And what Calvin meant by this was that the sinful human heart, by default, is constantly trying to get away from the true God, by imagining him to be other than he really is, by fashioning him into images and forms of what he is not in reality, by giving our love and our affection to gods that are no gods at all. Regardless of where we live, regardless of when we live in the history of the world, idolatry is a perennial problem. The human heart is an idol factory. And we see in our passage this evening the prophet Hosea shining a spotlight, as it were, on this perennial problem of idolatry, as God indicts his people who had turned away from him and given their hearts and their lives to Baal. We have been considering that these last few weeks. And not only were they giving themselves, their hearts and their lives to Baal, but they were doing it passionately. It was a passionate pursuit of their idols. Because this is how the human heart copes with its estrangement from God. You see, we were created by God to pursue him passionately. But now that that void exists because of sin, we in our sin seek to fill that void by pursuing idols just as passionately as we were created to pursue God. So we passionately pursue idols as they passionately pursued their idols here that we see in chapter 2. We read in verse 7, she will pursue her lovers, or she will chase her lovers, if you're reading in the NIV. Now, in the Hebrew language, the same verb can have multiple different meanings, all depending on how the writer chooses to write that particular verb, what stem he or she decides to use when writing that particular verb. And in Hosea 2:7, we have a very good example of this, because the verb to pursue in the Hebrew would normally be expressed in what is called the kal stem. And if it was written in this stem, it would simply mean they will pursue their idols. She will pursue her lovers. In Psalm 23:6, surely goodness and mercy shall pursue me all the days of my life. It's that word there. But in Hosea 2:7, we find the verb actually written not in the kal stem, but in what's called the pl stem. And when something is written in the PL stem, it is usually meant to intensify the action, to tone it up a notch, we would say. And so what we are learning here as we look at Hosea 2:7 is that Israel was not merely chasing or pursuing her idols. She was engaged in a passionate, eager, intense pursuit. A passionate pursuit. And as we consider the passage before us this evening, we're going to see three marks that characterize Israel in this passionate pursuit of her idols. Three marks that, in fact, characterize any person or any nation's pursuit of idols. We see first idolatry's degradation. Those who passionately pursue their idols tragically degrade themselves. We read in verse 2, contend with your mother, contend, for she is not my wife and I am not her husband, and let her put away her harlotry from her face and her adultery from between her breasts. We see in verse 4, the children are referred to children of harlotry, children of fornication. The same word used to describe Gomer and her children back in chapter 1. So we see that Israel's idolatry had plummeted by this time, had plummeted the nation into a state that could only be described in words that resembled the practices of adultery and prostitution. And there is likely some irony in the fact that much of the Baal worship of the time that Israel was involved in revolved around ritual ceremonies that were simply unmentionable. Ceremonies involving the most shameful acts of degradation. But there's more to the indictment, because as we've been seeing, making our way through the book of Hosea, as we've been seeing, turning from God amounts to no less than spiritual adultery. Idolatry itself has been represented so far as prostitution and adultery. And so we see that Israel's idolatry had degraded them as a people. They could have been God's precious bride, children of righteousness, but they have turned from Yahweh and are now children of harlotry. And they seem to have boasted in this degradation. They seem to have boasted in their new idol loves, even to the point of admitting their own status as Baal's prostitutes. Where do we get that? Well, look with me at verse 12 for a moment. I will destroy her vines and fig trees, of which she said, these are my wages, which my lovers have given me. Now, that word wages or pay in the NIV is actually the Hebrew word for the fee that a prostitute would be paid for her services. And Israel is almost reveling in this, according to God. As long as Baal seems to be giving them much outward prosperity, even though we know it was God all along, as long as Baal seems to be blessing their shameful acts of degradation, they are happy to continue prostituting themselves to this idol. The degradation of idolatry. And do we think we are that much more removed from idolatry's degrading effects in the year 2018? In a culture that has bowed down to the Baal of sex and pornography, where God's good gift of marital relations has been cheapened in the name of sexual liberation. And that is just one tiny slice of our own culture's passionate pursuit of idols. Whether it's sex-related or money-related or sports-related or celebrity-related or entertainment-related, whatever or whoever we pursue passionately instead of God ends up degrading us in the end. And that's what we see here. Idolatry degrades. We were made to bow our hearts before the Lord God only. And when we bow, whether inwardly or outwardly, to anyone or anything other than God, we have essentially prostituted ourselves to an idol. And how much worse for the people of God here who had been betrothed by their covenant husband. Idolatry is degrading. Well, secondly, we see that idolatry is deceptive. Those who passionately pursue their idols tragically deceive themselves. As Israel was tragically deceived, we read at the end of verse 5, "For she said, I will go after my lovers who give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flax, my oil and my drink." And you look down to verse 8, "For she does not know that it was I who gave her the grain," says God. "The new wine and the oil, and lavished on her silver and gold, which they used for Baal." So what madness we see displayed here in the conduct and practice of Israel. Remember that we have been considering how much God had blessed them on the outside. Their army was relatively strong. They had reconquered territories. They had some money set aside. They were gaining some influence in the Middle East. God was doing this for Israel, all under the hand of the wicked Jeroboam II. And Israel says it's coming from Baal. "She does not know that it was I who gave her the grain, the new wine, and the oil," says God. They were deceived in their idolatry. They were deceived. Because Israel kept giving themselves over to Baal in worship because they believed that he was blessing them for their prostitution of themselves to Baal, because they believed that it was him that was sending all this prosperity their way, they just continued to hire themselves out to the idol Baal. They were convinced that Baal worship was paying off. That's what God is saying here in Hosea. "My people do not understand." Why would they give it up? And friends, that is a fearful place for any person or people to be in. Scorning the hand that is feeding them. Receiving from God his rich blessings and then turning around and giving it to Baal. That's what God is saying that his people are doing. The deceptive power of idolatry. Once again, are we as a people or as a nation deceived by this same deceptive power in our own time? Have we, like Israel, succumbed to the deceptive influence of idolatry? What a fearful place to be in if that is the case. How much have we as a nation received from the hand of God, and how much of that have we been turning around and throwing it away to idols? Whether they're the idols of political or economic salvation or scientific progress, we take what God has given us and use it for Baal. And that's not a good place for any people to be in, as we see in our passage. We take from God, give it to our idols, and the most we say to the one who has given it to us is, "Out, out with your bigoted Christian law schools. Out with your outdated morality." Idolatry is deceptive because sin is deceptive. How much of the moral mess that we find ourselves in today is due to that deceptive power of idolatry? As God thundered through the prophet Isaiah at the same time that Hosea is in the north, Isaiah is in the south, and God thundering forth, "Woe to those who call good evil and evil good." Are we not doing the same thing in so many ways? And friends, the deceptive power of idolatry applies on the individual level as well. Whether that idol is money or sex or recognition or comfort or ease or hockey or soccer or basketball or our business or our homes. When we give our hearts to anyone or anything other than Yahweh, who alone deserves them, we deceive ourselves. We deceive ourselves. We think that those things can satisfy our deepest longings. We deceive ourselves. We think that God is okay if we serve two masters. Him on Sunday, another one on Monday, another one on Tuesday, as long as I'm back to Him on Sunday. We tell ourselves, like Israel had, that our idols have served us pretty well. Why give them up? Why give them up? The Apostle Paul, in his letter to the Romans, calls this exchanging the truth of God for a lie. Exchanging the truth of God for a lie. That is the deceptive power of idolatry. Well, we've seen the degradation of idolatry, the deception of idolatry. And finally, friends, we see here in our passage from Hosea, the destruction of idolatry. The destruction of idolatry. Those who passionately pursue their idols are on a pathway to destruction in their lives. And we see that in the case of Israel. And we know that idolatry has destroyed people and it has destroyed nations. And we've been reminded throughout the book of Hosea that God is not mocked. The idolatry of the people of God cannot, will not go unpunished. And so we see here in chapter 2, the beginning of chapter 2, in Hosea, how Israel's Baal worship is going to bring about their destruction. And it's not as if the nation will suddenly implode from the inside, as if some ticking time bomb were just waiting to go off in the land. This destruction will come from the outside, because it will come from God Himself. It will come from the betrayed husband who is avenging his own glory. And just as we saw the judgments piling up in chapter 1, we see something similar here in chapter 2. If Israel continues in this idolatry, God is clear what He is going to do about it. It will begin with what we read in verse 3, "I will strip her naked." He will expose her as on the day when she was born. And what God is saying here is that all of those blessings which He has been piling up for them are going to be taken away like that. Her strong army, her gold, her silver, her influence in the Middle East, all of His blessings are going to be snatched away, and Israel will be left with nothing. She will be as weak and as destitute and as powerless a nation as she was under the hand of Pharaoh in the day she was born. And in verse 9 we read, "And then I will uncover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and no one will rescue her out of my hand." And if you're reading in the NIV, the Bible that we provide in the seats, I believe it says, "No one will take her out of my hands." And that might give us the impression that Hosea is speaking here of something, or God is speaking through the prophet of something good, something positive, like when Jesus said, "No one can snatch his sheep out of his Father's hand," in John chapter 10. That's a very nice thing. That's a very good promise. good truth to hold. But that's not the idea here in Hosea. The New American Standard has captured the idea well in the word, "No one will rescue her from my hand." The King James and the New King James have rendered it, "No one will deliver her from my hand." And that's the idea. No one will be able to protect or save Israel from what God is about to do. She may turn to Egypt. She may turn to surrounding nations and look for an alliance and look for help, but she'll be in God's hand, and God is sovereign, and no one will be able to rescue Israel. Destruction of idolatry. That idea is captured for us in the letter to the Hebrews. We read, "It is a terrifying thing to fall into the hands of the living God." That's the idea here. They will fall into the hands of the living God. Idolatry's destruction, sending Israel, the covenant people of God, on a full steam collision course with the hand of God for judgment. Verse 13, "I will punish her for the days of the Baals." I will punish her for the days of the Baals. Once again, we see here in this passage, in the words of the biblical commentator Derek Kidner, we see both a window and a mirror. We see a window into the life of an idolatrous, covenant-breaking people, the northern kingdom of Israel, but we see a mirror. We see a mirror because the idolatry so latent in the human heart is reflected right back to us in these words. Because every generation has its days of the Baals, doesn't it? We might think that our own days are more sophisticated, but sin and idolatry do not progress or mature with civilization, as many people believe to be the case. The outward expressions may change, but the idolatrous human heart does not. Calvin's idol factory remains the same. Remains the same. Apart from the grace of God. And so while we've considered, friends, the degradation and the deception and the destruction of idolatry, we are going to end on a note of God's grace. Because our passage allows us to do that. It is true, those who chase their idols pursue them passionately, to their own degradation, to their own deception, to their own destruction. They are lost in this passionate pursuit. But there's another passionate pursuit taking place in our passage. Have you seen it? Can you see the God of all grace in passionate pursuit of His people? Yahweh passionately pursuing His idolatrous people. Look at verses 6 and 7. "Therefore, behold, I will hedge up her way with thorns, and I will build a wall against her so that she cannot find her paths. She will pursue her lovers, but she will not overtake them. And she will seek them, but will not find them. Then she will say, 'I will go back to my first husband, for it was better for me then than now.'" Like last week, a puzzle piece that seems to belong in another box. But we have it once again here. In the midst of judgment on idolatrous Israel, the gospel is going to be preached. The gospel is going to be preached as God is going to win back his unfaithful bride's love. We're only going to see verses 6 and 7 this evening, but when we pick up next time, Lord willing, as we finish the chapter, we're going to finish that gospel promise to God's people. But friends, let us take this great thought away with us this evening. Our God is a God who passionately pursues his own people. Who passionately pursues his people. Are you reminded perhaps of the prodigal son? In our words from Hosea, who seemed to have had his way hedged up with thorns, and his wall, in the Hebrew, it's, "I will wall up her wall," God says, so that she will not be able to get to her idols. Can you hear the prodigal son in the words of Israel that will come? "It was better for me then with Yahweh than it is for me now. My father's hired servants have more than enough food to eat, and I'm eating pods." Can you see the prodigal son getting ready to come home? Are you perhaps here this evening as that prodigal son? Have you given yourself over to idols? Have you forsaken the one who alone is worthy and deserving of your devotion? Are these words penetrating your own heart this evening? Maybe God has been walling up a wall in your own life, hedging your way with thorns, so that you will not get your idols. So that you will not reach them, so that you will stop passionately pursuing them and turn and passionately pursue Yahweh. So friends, we end this evening on this note, a reminder of the consequences and the effects of idolatry. It is degrading, it is deceptive, it is destructive. But a reminder of the God of all grace, who is so involved in the lives of his people and so jealous for their love that he will do what it takes to show them and you and I the futility and emptiness of pursuing passionately dead idols. So let us respond this evening by renewing our own commitment to God, to loving God wholeheartedly, to forsaking any idols that may be cropping up and trying to allure us away from our true husband, Jesus Christ. And let us give all of our hearts to God. And thank him. Thank him that he has revealed this in his word. And that he has rescued us from the deception and the destruction and the degradation of idolatry in Jesus Christ. And turned our eyes to his glory in the face of his Son. Where the idols fade away. As we behold the true God and the true life, Jesus Christ.